That's great to see everyone this morning. If you're following along, we'll be in the book of Habakkuk, chapter 1, going through chapter 3. In his happy book, Farewell to God, Charles Templeton, a former crony and companion of Billy Graham, details his reasons for rejecting the Christian faith. In one particularly enlightening chapter, The Patience of Job, Templeton turns his disillusionment with God towards the story of Job. He writes, Yahweh makes a wager with his adversary Satan, that Satan cannot shatter Job's faith. To back this assertion, he gives Satan free hand to do his worst without troubling to notify Job that he is about to be a pawn in a game. To make his point, Yahweh has Job's livestock stolen, his servants murdered, his house burned, and his children killed in a fire. Then, for emphasis, he afflicts Job with loathsome and agonizing disease. When finally Job does complain, Yahweh mounts a braggadocio defense and concludes by asking Job a pointed question. Is he willing to put Yahweh in the wrong in his wager with Satan so that he, Job, may be justified? At this, Job repents of his complaining and Yahweh wins the wager. Job returns to a life of luxury and all is right with the world, although one cannot but ask, if God had killed your children simply to make a point in an argument, would the granting to you of other children make up for the horrible deaths of the first? It is an immoral story, and it portrays an immoral God. And it does nothing to answer the problem it sets out to deal with, namely, the problem of evil. Moreover, there is no need to do so. The biblical answer has always been given. In the Genesis story of creation, we are told that suffering is God's punishment for sin. Because of the first man's obedience in the garden, all his descendants must suffer sorrow, sickness, pain, and death. So, let the reader put to the question, is this the truth at the heart of life, and is it possible to believe this and continue to believe that God is love? So, that's what this guy wrote in his Farewell to God. Now, if you think about the Bible in its entirety, you come to the conclusion, I think fairly quickly and fairly, that the people who wrote the Bible spent a considerable amount of time simply complaining to God about one thing or another. The book of Job is one big complaint. Many of the Psalms are mere complaints about one thing or another. Many of the prophets complain. The book of Numbers would not exist if the Israelites did not complain so much in the desert. And then there's Habakkuk. In Habakkuk, we read, the oracle that Habakkuk the prophet saw. O Lord, how long shall I cry for help, and you will not hear? Or cry to you violence, and you will not save? Why do you make me see iniquity, and why do you idly look at wrong? Destruction and violence are before me. Strife and contention arise. So the law is paralyzed, and justice never goes forth. For the wicked surround the righteous. So justice goes forth perverted. So let's put this in modern terms, if we're going to translate Habakkuk. Lord, I've been wondering, what's going on in the world? Where are you? God, if you're so powerful, if you're so mighty, if you're so amazing, and you're the God of love, then why did all these people die yesterday? You know, at a funeral, no less at the hands of another bomber. We hear that all the time. You can't even mourn in the Middle East without sometimes some bomber coming and killing more people. Or all the assorted things we see. You know, the Boko Haram and the ISIS, all the awful things that they do and others do. Lord, allow me to be honest, therefore. Is it so much hatred and violence in the world that I don't even feel like reciting it anymore? There's war, violence, hatred, aggression. There are children killing children, children killing parents, parents killing children. Lord, I've just been wondering, what is going on in the world? And that's kind of what Habakkuk is looking at. He's looking at this twisted world, kind of like we have today. He goes on, but that's just me. I'm one small person amid all those who cry out and say, Lord, what is going on in the world? People like Charles Templeton, who I read an excerpt from. You know, I'm sorry, but in a sense, sometimes we kind of feel like Templeton does. We have the same questions, sometimes the same fear, sometimes the same angst and trepidation, and sometimes the same solitude as we live out our lives. What are we supposed to feel or think? If Salman Rushdie said somewhere, the barbarians were not only at our gates, but within our skins. And I think what he meant there was that we're just as capable sometimes of this violence that we call God out to condemn. You know, it's hard sometimes for us to forgive, but we want God's forgiveness. So, you know, we're kind of like other people, is that we want God to swoop down on his white horse and wave his magic wand and make it all go away, to end all the suffering and the pain that's out there in this world. We want some peace, some tranquility, a place to raise our kids and grandkids, and you know, without all the fear that comes with it, you know, illnesses and all kind of other stuff. We want that to go away in our lives. So people wonder sometimes why we have what's happening out there. How long, Sovereign Lord, holy and true, until your judgment, until you judge the inhabitants of this earth and avenge our blood? How long will we be told to wait a little longer? Of course, there's Habakkuk and what he said. O Lord, are you not from everlasting? My God, my Holy One, we will not die. O Lord, you have appointed them to execute judgment. O Rock, you have ordained them to punish. Your eyes are too pure to look on evil. You cannot tolerate wrong. Why then do you tolerate the treacherous? Why are you silent while the wicked swallow up those more righteous than themselves? You have made men like fish in the sea, like sea creatures that have no ruler. The wicked foe pulls all of them up with hooks. He catches them in his net. He gathers them up in his dragnet, and so he rejoices and is glad. Therefore he sacrifices to his net and burns incense to his dragnet. For by his net he lives in luxury and enjoys the choicest food. Is he to keep on emptying the nest, destroying nations without mercy? Will stand at my watch and station myself on the ramparts? I will look to see what he will say to me and what answer I am given to this complaint. So Habakkuk, you know, cries out to the Lord. He says, look, this guy's getting rich, and we see these people around, and they're rich, and they pledge allegiance, so to speak, and they worship their ability to be rich and enjoy the good life while so many suffer. Templeton asked near his book, if there is an omnipotent and loving God, why does he permit earthquakes, hurricanes, droughts, and other natural disasters to kill indiscriminately tens of thousands of men, women, and children? That's on page 193. Going on page 193, how could a loving God originate as part of his creation such horrible illnesses as encephalitis, cerebral palsy, various cancers, leprosy, Alzheimer's, other incurable diseases? Ebola is on the rise again. And allow them to indiscriminately affect so many people. How could a loving God create an endless hell and consign the majority of the world's population to it year after year, century after century, simply because they do not worship Him? Let me put this again into a common tongue. Jesus does not love the little children. I don't think that Habakkuk's questions are at the root much different from Templeton's. Lord, I've been wondering. You're a God. I mean, you're everlasting. You're the life. You're eternity. You're hope and peace. And you hate violence and wickedness. You have to admire Habakkuk's courage. I will stand watch. I will wait to see what I receive from my complaint. So the ant shakes his fist at the elephant and says, I demand answers. Now, we can't explain the irrational behavior, the evil that goes around this world. You know, who are slowly killing each other in these senseless acts of violence. We can't understand the unscrupulous adults who prey on children. And I can't understand the inhuman ideology that prevents millions of humans around the world to be systematically and legally slaughtered every minute, day, week, and of the month and year. And I'll say this, if God is guilty for not preventing hurricanes, for not preventing disease, then how much more guilty are humans for the day-to-day abomination we call right to choose? You know, people like to lay blame on God, but they don't lay blame on themselves. If God is guilty for allowing the Satan to starve people to death with no rain or with too much rain, then how much more are we guilty, you know, for building people building multi-million dollar buildings while beggars sit at the gate sometimes. Who has perpetuated evil and blamed God? Who has dismissed God with a wave of their highbrow self-righteousness, and God does not weep for them? But if God is guilty for condemning people to hell for their lack of righteousness, then how much more guilty are we who allow the guilty to sit in prisons day after day, awaiting nothing more than death? So we have to look at these things and look at them. God is not like Templeton says. God is, allows things to happen, because this is the world that sin has made. And in this world, there's going to come a judgment sometime. And Habakkuk, as we're going to see, realizes that. So while many people out there can condemn God, they can say God doesn't care for people, they can say that what he did to Job was a terrible thing, and like this right here, and there are a lot of people that think that way. But Habakkuk is actually asking, Lord, I was just wondering, where are you, oh God, where are you? When I'm, when I'm stupid and weak and mean and hateful and abusive, where are you? So, it'd be nice if we could deliver up this morning on a silver platter all the answers you need to ask in life. If the Lord himself could just answer these things. So, we know that God acts in his own way. And we have to understand that. The Lord said a lot of things to Habakkuk. And when he asked, and yet when the New Testament writers scanned through Habakkuk's oracle, they clung to one verse in particular. And even then, only part of chapter 2, verse 4. The righteous will live by faith. And that's the real key to everything. Job lived by faith. Yes, a lot of bad things happened to him. Yes, God allowed Satan to do it. But let's also remember that when man sinned, God could have destroyed, and God could have started over. Job was only there by the grace of God allowing him to be there, allowing him and others to live, allowing us to live, even though we're sinful. So that's the grace of God that does that. So if you look at God and say, well, he's done some bad things. No, bad things enter this world with Adam and Eve. And into this world, that's why we have hurricanes. That's why we have pestilence. That's why we have this. That's why we see the horrible things that we see around this world. Not because God is not righteous, but because man is sinful. Now, God doesn't stop it sometimes. Well, he wants everyone to have a chance, even those evil people, to have a change in their hearts and have a change of life. The innocent that die, as horrible as that is, they go to God, where they find peace. Where someday, as we live this life, we'll find peace with him. God doesn't look at it as this is the best place for you. But God looks at it as where you're going after that. The fact of the matter is that there are times when we see a world or a situation run amok, and it seems that God is, not doing anything about it. And what shall we do? The righteous will live by faith. And why? Because there's simply no other way to live. The righteous live by only one thing that makes sense: God. Faith is the righteous confidence that things make sense to God, and when they make no apparent sense to us. And the scripture says we live by faith, not by sight. We're going to see a lot of awful things out there, but faith is what drives us. We can look with sight and we can see all these terrible things, and we can be like Templeton, who says, well, that's an evil God. That's not a God of love, and all those kind of things that he wrote. And many people say that. But we live by faith. And that's the ultimate test. The test that Adam and Eve failed. The test that everyone fails except for Jesus after that. Is that we stumble and we sin and we fall short of that. And that sin, the world doesn't understand that, but that sin separates us from a holy and righteous God that is pure beyond any reasonable thing that we can think of. And he cannot be commingled with such as this here. God is not as the Bible says, not paying attention to what's happening, but that he's long-suffering, wanting no one to have to go to hell. But that's a person's choice, that if they're going to live outside of God, that if they're not going to live with God, then God is not going to live with them in the end. Someone once said, "It is not necessary to have either a keen intellect or great knowledge of God, but simply a heart resolved to apply itself to Him and for Him, and to love Him only." Now, I think we should be like Charles Sibben and Habakkuk and work our way through our frustrations with God. We get frustrated and we need to work that out. I'd add one caveat to that. The conclusions that we come to are very important. Now, Templeton resigns himself to a life of futility and despair and ultimately rejects Christ. Habakkuk resolves, even in the midst of hopelessness, to persevere and ultimately resolve that he will respond with faith. The same Job who said, "Naked I came from my mother's womb, and naked I will depart. The Lord gave, and the Lord taken away. May the name of the Lord be praised." That is how Habakkuk responded. Remember Daniel's three friends? They could throw him in the fire. And they said, "Well, if God wants us to live, we're going to live in the midst of thousands degree fire. But if we don't live, that's God's will." That's faith. That's faith that trusts God, that He's going to work things out, and that He's wiser. And to me, nothing calls people to have faith in God more than seeing the evil that's around in this world. Templeton looks at that and he says, "Oh, that's not a God. But I look at it and I see that this is what sin made. These are evil people, evil men, evil nations and evil leaders who are out there harming people, taking from people, being evil, doing all these awful things. That's the world that sin has made." Notice the third chapter of Habakkuk's prophecy seems to fit nowhere. Why? It is not an oracle. It's not a "thus saith the Lord." It's not an answer to his questions. In fact, it's none of these. In fact, it's a psalm. Psalms are Hebrew psalms, poetry that they offered in worship. Habakkuk, when he looks around and saw despair, he delighted in God. When he saw hatred, he offered hallelujahs. When he saw rage, he offered rejoicing. When he saw a war, he offered a woo-hoo. And then he saw revenge, he offered reverence. When he saw greed, he offered glory. And when he saw pillaging, he offered praise. When he saw loathing, he offered love. When he was frustrated, he responded in faith. Habakkuk's response is quite contrary to Templeton's. He offers adulation, praise, rejoicing, and offering to God. Even our faith is an offering to God. But how else can faith respond? To respond without worship, to respond with rejection, is to live in despair and unbelieving hopefulness? Templeton hadn't put himself in a better place. He's just resigned that, life is real tough, and then we're going to die someday. There's misery around this earth, and unless you're one of the few fortunate ones, you're going to live in misery and you're going to die. So, is that any kind of way to live? But to respond with worship, now there's an act of faith. If the righteous will live by faith, and we show it by responding to every situation we find ourselves in with worship of God, there's nothing that can happen to us that'll cause us to say, "Here's why I reject God." And I believe that amidst a tiresome and struggling life we might have, we find reason to put our faith in God and worship. And so did Habakkuk. In Chapter 3, "O Lord, I have heard the report of you and your work, O Lord, I do fear. In the midst of the years, revive it. In the midst of the years, make it known. In wrath, remember mercy. God came from Teman and the Holy One, Mount Pern. His splendor covers the heavens and the earth is full of his praise. His brightness was like the light rays flashing from the hand. And there he is veiled with his power. Before him went pestilence, and plague followed him at his heels. He stood and measured the earth. He looked and shook the nations. Then the eternal mountains were scattered. The everlasting hills sank low. His were the everlasting ways. I saw the tents of Cushman in affliction. The curtains in the land of Midian did tremble. Was your wrath against the rivers? Was your anger against the rivers? Or your indignation against the sea? When you rode on your horse, on your chariot of salvation, you stripped the sheath of your bow, calling for many arrows. You split the earth with rivers. The mountains saw you and writhed. The raging waters swept by. It lifted the hand on high. The sun and moon stood still at their light. At the light your arrows they sped. At the flash of your glittering spear, you marched through the earth in fury. You threshed the nations in anger. You went out for the salvation of your people, for the salvation of your anointed. You crushed the head of the house of the wicked, laying him bare from thigh to neck. You pierced with his own arrows the head of the warriors, who came like a whirlwind to scatter me, rejoicing as if to devour the poor in secret. You trampled the sea with your horses, the surging of mighty waters. I hear, and my body trembles, my lips quiver at the sound. Rottenness enters my bones, my legs tremble beneath me. Yet I will quietly wait for the day of trouble to come upon people who invade us. Though the fig tree should not blossom, nor fruit be on its vine, the produce of the olives fail, and the fields yield no food, the flock be cut off from the fold, and there will be no herd in the stalls, yet I rejoice in the Lord. I will take joy in the Lord of my salvation. God, the Lord, is my strength. He makes my feet like the deer's. He makes me tread on high places to the choir master with stringed instruments. So, two ways to look at what's happening in the world today with all the problems that we have. We can be Templeton, who says this is an evil God who allows these things to happen. And both Templeton and Habakkuk, and we may ask some of those same questions sometimes. But in the end, what is our response to that? To reject God? To live our hopeless little life in hopelessness? So that in the end, we can die and become the dirt again? So we can go back to nothingness? Or we can look at it like Habakkuk says, ask those same questions, but know that God in His own time is going to act, and He's going to be righteous, that He's going to be fair, and that He's going to be merciful. The time that He gives evil on this earth is the time that they have to make a change. That when they don't make that change, they've had all the time in the world to do so. It's their own fault. They separated themselves from God. We can either draw near to God, or we can withdraw from Him. That's our choice. We can look at the world and look at all the evil and say there is no God. Or we can look at the world and see all the evil and know that there is still a God, and that someday His righteousness, if we have faith, we can believe that His righteousness will someday even the score. He will take care of the wicked. He will destroy them, as Habakkuk said. And those who follow Him will never see anything like this on the earth. We won't see a world of sin, but we'll see a world of grace in heaven, a world of peace, a world of mercy, and a world of love. And that's the hope that we extend to the world today. I don't know what your condition is this morning. If you have need of the church, won't you come?